Wednesday, September 25th. Again, German warplanes have bombed London. Another all-night assault on the British capital. And raids have been carried out elsewhere in England, Scotland, and Wales. British planes have bombed Berlin and carried out attacks on German forts along the Channel coast. The Battle of Dakar in West Africa continues. And from the Far East comes a report of a new German-Japanese defense agreement, apparently planted to test world opinion, particularly that of the United States. For the agreement, says the report from Shanghai, would take effect only in case of collaboration between the United States and Great Britain. This morning, Columbia calls in its correspondents in Berlin and London for the latest news from those points, and then brings you a report from our own national capital. While we're waiting for the news from Berlin, here's more about this Far Eastern story. The dispatch comes from Shanghai and quotes authoritative advices from Tokyo, but the indication is that the whole proposal came from Germany, and thus the story is one planted by the Nazi propaganda ministry. Tokyo reports that the Japanese-German pact is supposed to have been approved by Japan at a secret imperial conference held last week. Any collaboration between the United States and Britain on such matters as the status of the British Far Eastern base at Singapore presumably would make the so-called alliance effective. According to the dispatch, the chief aim of the whole thing would be to divert United States' attention from the Far East. Now the news from Europe. Edwin Hartridge from Berlin.
This is Berlin. This morning, we are told that large numbers of German bombers left their bases in the early hours to attack London again. But we have no further news of what is happening. When I was assembling my notes upstairs, I was also listening to the German shortwave musical program in English. And the announcer put on a fresh record as I left the room. It was the Limehouse Blues, played by a German jazz orchestra. This morning, before I came to the studio, I heard the news from the British Broadcasting Corporation. The announcer stated that from now on, Berlin will be visited every night by the planes of the Royal Air Force, and in ever-increasing numbers. So it looks as though the bombings of London and Berlin are going to be an everyday occurrence, or I should say, every night. And it's going to be tough getting sleep until the early hours of the morning. For one thing, the German anti-aircraft craft barrage over Berlin is very noisy. Following on the heels of the big air raid of Monday evening, we experienced another British attack on the German capital last night. It started shortly before midnight and lasted about 2 hours and 45 minutes. I could hear the planes overhead between the heavy bursts of anti-aircraft fire. The official communique this morning states, and I quote, British planes repeated their attacks on Berlin's western and northern suburbs. The enemy planes were met by a heavy barrage of anti-aircraft fire, which effectively prevented their attacks on more important objectives. The bombs only caused slight damage to some buildings and residential quarters. There were several victims among the civilian population, end of quote. As to the extent of the damage done, I have no details to give you at the moment. The weather is gradually turning colder, and so the authorities are making provision for public comfort during the long, chill hours spent in air raid shelters. The Air Ministry has okayed the proposal to place electric stoves in the shelters, but no other type of heating will be approved for reasons of safety. The Foreign Office disclosed this morning that an arrangement has been made with the Finnish government to transport unarmed German troops through Finland to Norway above the Arctic Circle. We are all waiting here for some concrete news or developments about the recent conferences between the Axis powers about the Mediterranean and North Africa. Last night, Herr von Ribbentrop had a conference with Serrano Sunier, the number two man in the Spanish government. Undoubtedly, the Spanish Minister of the Interior was given the full plans of the Axis powers as they relate to Spain. Now there are unconfirmed reports that Count Ciano has to come up from Rome, arriving here on Thursday. No doubt he will also confer with Signor Sunier on Herr von Ribbentrop. From the developments, it will appear that Spain is to be fitted into the new political and military plans of Berlin and Rome. Turning the pages of the Bursen Zeitung, my eye was caught by an interesting headline on the last page. It stated, quote, foreign horses must learn German. In the story below, related some of the problems the Germans are having with their war booty. It seems that a lot of French, Belgian, and Dutch horses were captured and taken to Germany. But these horses don't understand the German equivalent of woe and giddy up. In fact, sometimes these horses do just the reverse of what they're commanded to do. But the paper advises the horses must be treated kindly and with patience. They can be expected to learn something of the German language. There's not the same trouble with 6,500 automobiles, which have been taken from the Allied forces, it is reported today. Most of these cars were left behind by the English after the evacuation of Dunkirk. And 4,500 of these vehicles have been repaired and are now in service for the German army. This is Edwin Hartridge. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
In a moment, we'll take you to London, and following the London report, we'll get a report from our own national capital. Before taking you to London, however, here's a brief dispatch from Rome. British bombing planes have struck hard at Tobruk, Marshal Graziani's main Libyan base for the Italian offensive against Egypt. The attack killed 15 persons, wounded 70, and caused considerable damage. Here's a dispatch from Vichy. The Vichy government reports officially that French planes bombed Gibraltar for 2 hours yesterday in retaliation for the British shelling of Dakar, West Africa. Columbia takes you now back across the ocean to the British capital for the report of Ben Robertson, Jr. Go ahead, London.
This is London. The west end of London had a tough night last night. The Germans were overhead almost continuously from 9 o'clock until about daylight. The guns banged away and the searchlights glared, but the bombs came on anyhow. I know, for I was out in the midst of part of it with the London Fire Brigade. In one of the city's famous streets, we found several buildings in ruins and two others going up in blazes. Soon we saw the searchlights focusing their rays just above our area, and we knew what that meant. The Germans were returning, a favorite habit of the Nazis. They start incendiary fires, and then they come back and drop bombs all over that section. A few moments later, we heard a whistling sound. All of us except the firemen fell flat on our faces. That one fell some distance away. We made our way to a nearby station house, and while sitting in the car in the street, we heard three more coming. I sat there in cold terror while the packet hit one block and two blocks behind us. Next, a piece of shrapnel fell with a dead sort of thud right on top of the car, and I said to the fireman, "I've had enough." I told him frankly I was going home. The fireman replied, "Why, so far, this is only a quiet night." So far, I was right. During the early morning hours, the Germans rained firebombs down on central London. Several hospitals were hit, and fires now out were started at four of them. A number of people were killed and some injured when what is believed to be an aerial torpedo fell on one building. Most of the casualties were in another building which took the blast. The torpedo fell almost immediately outside a restaurant where there were a number of people. There was no panic and only a few were hurt. A famous Wren church was hit by an incendiary. An American firm was hit. So were buildings in another famous London street, starting another fire. The fate of General de Gaulle's attempt to rally Dakar to the cause of his free Frenchmen is still a great mystery in London. The general's London headquarters has announced that he has withdrawn his troops and ships because his emissaries had been fired on, and he did not want to be a party to a fight between Frenchmen. Vichy said six British attempts to land 2,000 troops near Dakar had been repulsed. These reports were denied in London. Other London reports stated that, quoting, "operations by our forces are continuing," unquote. No details are yet available and no official statement has been issued by the British government during the night. The official communique describing last night's raids says that although London was again the main German objective, bombs were also dropped in other parts of England, in Scotland and in Wales. Invasion ports in Berlin were again attacked, but last night's raid on London was so severe that London newspapers have buried the Berlin bombing and played their own story right across the page. Malcolm MacDonald, the Minister of Health, has announced he is arranging for the immediate evacuation of mothers and children from London and also for the removal of all old, infirm, and bedridden people. This morning, the Food Ministry announced that on September 30th, the quarter-pound-a-week butter ration will be cut in half. Margarine and cooking fats can be used to fill in. The reason for the cut is said to be due to the normal decrease in Dominion production at this time of year. It is also announced that there will be a temporary increase in the meat ration by 8 cents more a week. London has had another air raid this morning, but the city went about its business as usual. The Vatican Radio announces that His Holiness the Pope, through his apostolic delegate in London, has sent a message of felicitation to their majesties, the King and Queen, quote, on their happy escape from death and injury when their residence was selected as a military objective for repeated bombing.
We return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Ben Robertson, Jr., reporting from London. Here is another dispatch from Vichy. Official reports say that the Dakar battle is continuing, with fierce fighting and heavy casualties. The shelling of the city by British ships is reported, but no mention is made of the free French collaboration with the British, or that the leader of the attack is General de Gaulle. Now the news direct from our own national capital, reported by Albert Warner. We take you now to Washington.
Private information coming to the State Department gives confirmation to the idea that Germany and Japan are discussing a diplomatic agreement which amounts to an alliance. Now that in itself is not especially surprising or unforeseen. Germany would tell Japan to go as far as it pleases in the Far East, and Japan would divert American attention from Europe. Germany, in turn, would attempt to make diversion for the United States in South America. But what is more surprising is this: the diplomatic hint in a well-informed quarter here that Soviet Russia is also sitting in on the deal. In the last 6 weeks, there have been frequent conversations between the State Department and the Soviet ambassador. To observers, it seemed that an effort was being made to solve old problems, perhaps in an effort to have good relations between the United States and Russia stand as a counterbalance to Japanese ambition in the Far East. Now the opinion is developing in the State Department that no help can be expected from Soviet Russia in checking Japan's march of empire so long as it does not strike at Soviet territory. In fact, the reports in diplomatic circles confront the State Department with two situations which give no comfort to officials here. One is that Russia will keep hands off and even encourage Japan to expand southward in Asia. In fact, the Soviet press calls the clash in Indochina just an extension of the imperialist war. The other situation, according to the rumors heard in State Department circles, is that Russia may even cut off the aid and supplies which it is giving China. There are some officials who now believe Russia has such a working arrangement with Germany, or is under such fear, that German influence can bring about a recognition of Japan's predominance in Central and Southern Asia. They think perhaps a rough agreement is in sight between Germany, Italy, Russia, and Japan. As for us, there are authoritative signs that the State Department is on the verge of a decision to take penalizing economic action against Japan. It would be no surprise if an announcement were forthcoming in the next few days. If the decision is to act, it may take the form of laying an embargo on the shipment of important commodities to Japan. For some time, there's been a prohibition against the sending of airplanes and high-test aviation gasoline to the Japanese. The president has authority by executive order to extend that embargo and to cut off exports of iron, steel, scrap, and oil. These articles already are subject to a licensing system. The president would need merely to say that these materials are necessary to our national defense. It would also be possible for the president and the treasury to raise the tariff on articles imported from Japan. Another reinforcement to this type of pressure might be a gesture of naval cooperation between Britain and the United States in the joint use of naval bases in the Far East. One of the bits of information which comes from Africa to administration officials here is that a German mission recently passed through Casablanca in Africa on its way to Dakar. It consisted of a group of port authorities. Perhaps that German interest in Dakar was one of the reasons which led Great Britain to show with warships its own concern over that African port. It supported the possibility of future German use of Dakar as an air base or a transportation center to evade the British blockade. And by the way, one of those new listening posts established by the State Department is already functioning. The American listening post at Dakar is an experienced member of the Foreign Service, Thomas C. Wasson, who arrived there only 10 days ago. We return you now to New York.
And with this news from Washington, Columbia concludes this morning report of national and international developments, which comes to you each morning at this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin, Ben Robertson, Jr. from London, and Albert Warner from Washington. Barry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.